The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Good morning and welcome to a busy day of earnings on Squawk Box. Here are your headlines today. Meta shares sink in extended trade despite a beat on earnings as CEO Mark Zuckerberg rekindles fears over excessive AI spending.
I actually think we're in a place where we've shown that we can build leading models and be the leading AI company in the world.
Deutsche Bank posts a 10% rise in first quarter pre-tax profit as credit loss provisions shrink. We'll be hearing from the CFO, James van Molke, at 7:30 CET.
BNP Paribas earnings are hitting the tape with attention on the outlook as the French lender steps up cost cutting. We'll hear from the CFO, Lars Machinel, that's later on in the show. BHP also making an offer for rival Anglo-American and a potential mega deal for the world's largest listed miner.
And Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez halts public duties and threatens to resign after a court launches a corruption probe into his wife's business dealings. Numbers are just hitting the tape from Deutsche Bank today for the first quarter, and Christian Sewing, the chief executive, is calling the quarter their highest first quarter profit since 2013 as they achieved double-digit profit growth. Just looking into these numbers now, we've got net profit up 10%, 1.5 billion euros. Profit before tax up 10% to 2 billion euros. The company producing a ROTE that has risen to 8.7% from 8.3% in the prior year. The cost income ratio improving to 68% from 71% in prior year. Couple of catalysts in the backdrop here. Don't forget the return to investment banking that we've seen that has been very much a driver for some of the big investment banks stateside, and something that also is coming through in the numbers today. The company, the CEO, talking about generating solid revenue momentum in an environment of normalizing interest rates. And that is the change we are witnessing here. Just what it means for the bulk of banks now, some deriving more from fee income, others still relying on the interest rate story. So they're talking about having a well-balanced business model. Also going on to highlight that they delivered on their cost target and that they're still determined to maintain that discipline. Strong capital base, they're saying, does enable them to increase distributions to shareholders while supporting that business growth plan. In terms of what we're seeing from the business as well, provision for credit losses, 439 million, that is down 10%. The company is saying its four-year guidance is reaffirmed at the higher end of the range of 25 to 30 basis points of average loans. I think the market closely looking at all exposures for the banks at this point in the cycle, the higher for longer story that has been communicated by central banks. And when it comes to Deutsche Bank, don't forget, a very big lender. There's been a lot of commercial real estate issues back in the German market. I think many are concerned about what that exposure will look like. And no doubt there'll be further probing as to what is underlying these numbers today.
Yeah, certainly will be the case. It's something that we'll look for, we'll be looking out for as well, is just the net interest income across all of these, right? Really, right? Is there beginning to get a sluggish sense within all of this coming to the fore as well? And really significant for Deutsche is a look at that investment banking momentum, perhaps underappreciated according to Morgan Stanley as well, saying that that might be a part of the business to really be looking at as well overall here. Yeah. Those loan losses as well, a key part of the overall picture as well.
Just to get into those net revenues, up 1% over the prior year. In terms of the corporate bank, that revenue line was down 5% on the year. The investment bank revenues, though, were up 13%. So again, to the point around what I was saying with the recovery in investment banking, FIC fixed income and currency revenues up 7%. They're saying development was driven in part by 14% year-on-year growth in financing revenues. Credit trading revenues grew significantly on the year, and benefits and investments in prior periods. Emerging market revenues slightly higher. So that investment bank story coming through. Private bank net revenues were down 2%. Asset management was up 5% over the prior year. We're going to be hearing more from the Deutsche Bank CFO later this hour. Don't miss Annetta's interview with James von Moltke at 7:30 CET.
Another lender then coming out with earnings, BNP Paribas coming out with Q1 numbers as well. Then the company calling them very good, particularly in this first quarter, putting out its performance and the confirmed trajectory then for 2024 for the remainder then of the year. Company saying that its revenue was down 4% when it comes to its corporate investment banking unit. So CIB going down there. Overall group revenues, though, 12.4 billion is the mark then that we're getting out of the company, then down 0.4% year on year there. Operating expenses also coming down 1.5% there, just below 8 billion euros there, 7.94 to be exact. Cost of risk, that has actually gone up by 8.1% at 640 million euros as well. So significant moves when it comes to that. Global banking, though, was up by 6.1% in the quarter then. So significant moves coming through there. We will continue to, of course, unpack a lot of these results then throughout the show as well. Question marks around French retail banking, wealth, as well as asset management. Those all anticipated to have beaten expectations. We'll be hearing from BNP Paribas' CFO, that's Lars Michonel, later in the show. We'll bring you that conversation at 7:40 CET.
Let's get to Meta, the stock sinking double digits in extended trade after softer than expected revenue projections for the second quarter. And CEO Mark Zuckerberg spent his opening statement on the earnings call focusing on the amount of money the shift to AI is going to cost the company. The selling wiped almost $200 billion off the company's market value. That's despite a stellar set of results, with first quarter net income more than doubling on the year. Speaking on the call, Zuckerberg said building Meta's AI capabilities was likely going to take several years.
We typically don't focus that much on monetization of the new areas until they reach significant scale, because it's so much higher leverage for us just to improve monetization on other things before these new products are at scale. So you enter this period where I think kind of smart investors see that the product is scaling and that there's a clear monetizable opportunity there, even before the revenue materializes.
Thank you. Meanwhile, it looks like AI spending is going to be top of the agenda as investors digest big tech earnings this quarter, with Amazon, Microsoft and Alphabet all following Meta lower after the close. Francisco Bido joins us now, Senior Portfolio Manager at FM Investments. Thank you so much for joining us. Can I just get into what we saw from Meta effectively telling us that AI is going to cost quite a bit, but it's not going to be also that fast coming through. So scale comes first, then monetization. Is this a market that is willing to be patient given the escalation we've seen in share prices?
Well, thanks for having me. No, it's not willing to be patient. Last time I checked, Meta was up down about 15% after hours. So clearly very impatient and, coming off of a very strong report, I don't see much to fault other than the CapEx expanding, as you mentioned previously. So, and that's an expense that needs to happen if you want to grow into the future. So it's looking good from my side. It's a buying opportunity, if anything.
Just running through those numbers, the expenses side, we saw the forecast rising to 96 billion to 99 billion. That is up from 94 to 99 seen previously. CapEx now seen 30 to 40 billion, up from earlier forecasts of 35 to 37 billion. Something I've been highlighting has been that you are now seeing that the expenses can be OPEX as well as CapEx when it comes to AI, the nature of this type of investment. Just how much money is Facebook, Meta, Instagram, you know, the whole range of the business across its various different units, how much are they going to have to pour into the overall group trying to achieve AI dominance?
Well, I think it's probably too early to say exactly and give a monetary figure, but I can tell you this, they really need to put the money into it. And they need to start early, and they have a very, very large platform, very complicated, and with a lot of moving parts. And if they want to really use AI in a beneficial way, they really have to dig into all the massive amounts of data they've piled in over the years and so on. They have to figure out a way how to use that and train the networks and train the systems to actually use them. And that's going to take some time. So they have the Llama 3 platform, which is promising. It can draw animations. It can do lots of things. Actually, it can take a static picture and make it move for you, which doesn't seem like a lot, but I see many applications as an engineer for those things. So it's clear to me that they really need to spend the money across their platforms and investing for AI. How much? We'll see. You know, and will we see it anytime soon? I don't think so. I think Zuckerberg was right in that sense.
Yeah, Francisco, I mean, you just see a stunning rise then in this company since, particularly in that share price since late 2022, primarily then. But what would be your biggest concern here? The fact that there doesn't look to be another sense of incremental revenue or the increased CapEx spend. Which one of those perhaps worries you most?
Actually, I will take the other point of view. I actually like, you know, the CapEx expanding. I mean, it has to happen. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is a company like Meta doesn't spend on CapEx. And then we got to wonder, where's their leadership position? Where's the innovation going to come from and so on? You need systems. You need a lot of chips. You know, the chip companies are going to benefit from a lot of these CapEx expenditures. But I see that as a positive thing. It's just an expense that needs to happen. If you're a growing company and you're going to keep growing, you know, you make all that money, put some of it back into the company.
Yeah, a big part of the business has always been advertising. That continues to do well. Do you see that still moving forward and continuing from where it is right now?
Oh, yes. They show healthy metrics in advertising and user engagement and so on. So in that sense, the last report actually looks fine, looks pretty good. So if there were any other company other than Meta, I think investors will be thrilled. But the fact that it's Meta, they want to be they want a repeat of the last quarter. And that's clearly not sustainable. But they're buying back share, they're paying dividend, they're doing a lot of the right things.
Francisco, the strategy that was spelled out by Mark Zuckerberg yesterday suggests this absolute pivot drive into AI. So the bet now, I think, for a lot of investors is guessing whether you think Meta, whether you think Zuckerberg can be successful in AI. What we've seen so far with Llama, how do you think it stacks up in the race towards AI?
Well, it's more... that's an interesting question because I don't see it more like a race because they're not really racing with other companies. I mean, it appears to be that way in the marketplace, but I don't see it that way. The way that I see it is they're really racing to really monetize what they have inside the house, as opposed to competing with anybody else. They're competing with themselves. How can they use all that data and really turn it and really monetize it? I think in the case of Facebook, it's pretty clear they can deliver value to the investors by making their advertising a lot more targeted using AI. And by using Facebook information and maybe doing WhatsApp and whatever, you know, and really cross-pollinating a lot of these technologies and making it happen. And you need, they got the ingredients there. They just got to make it, just got to cook it. You know, they have the right recipe, I believe, long-term. So, you know, I'm overall positive on what I saw in the report and the reaction, the price reaction of the market. I did expect prices to go down a little bit, not that much. But it is what it is. I'll take it.
It can be a nervous wait seeing what comes out of the oven sometimes. Francisco, thank you very much for joining us. Francisco Bito with us, Senior Portfolio Manager, FM Investments. Microsoft and Amazon will become the next members of the Magnificent Seven to post results, reporting after the bell today. Analysts are expecting Microsoft earnings and revenue to grow 15% on the year, with near 20% growth in its cloud division. Now, revenue and profit at Google parent Alphabet are seen sliding from Q4 levels, but are expected to show growth on the year. Advertising will be in the spotlight after Meta's softer-than-expected revenue guidance, while investors will also be looking for signs of sustained growth in the Google Cloud division. IBM shares are lower in extended trade after Q1 revenues came in weaker than expected. The software and consulting company also announced plans to acquire cloud software company HashiCorp in a deal worth $6.4 billion. Elsewhere, Boeing posted better-than-feared results for its first quarter, reporting a $355 million loss and an 8% revenue slide. The plane maker burned through $3.9 billion of cash in the period, better than a company estimate. Rival Airbus will report today, and we will be hearing from the CFO, Thomas Toepfer, on tomorrow's show. Don't miss that interview at 7:15 CET Friday.
Well, we certainly have a busy one for you. Coming up on the show, a bumper day of earnings conversations with some of the biggest names in European business. We start off with Equinor CEO Anders Obidal next, as the firm beats on first quarter profit. Plus, Deutsche Bank seeing profit surge 10% on the year in the first quarter. We'll bring you Annette's interview with the CFO, James von Moltke, throughout the morning. And don't miss our conversation then with AstraZeneca CEO Pascal Soriot, with the firm's Q1 numbers due to cross the wires in around 45 minutes' time. I'd say first on CNBC Conversation the next hour.
Listen to CNBC's Beyond the Valley, the podcast that explores the biggest tech news from across the globe. Join me, Arjun Karpal.
And me, Tom Chitty, every week as we bring you insights into the top stories, unpack the latest trends, and find out where the industry is headed.
Now available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts.
Nestlé has missed sales estimates, with first quarter organic sales rising by 1.4% amid soft demand as well as higher prices. However, the Swiss consumer giant still backed its full-year outlook for sales to rise by around 4%.
Equinor has posted adjusted pre-tax earnings of $7.53 billion for the first quarter, well down on the near $12 billion reported a year ago. But it was ahead of expectations, according to a company compiled consensus. The Norwegian oil and gas producer said it was boosted by production in its home country, with oil and gas production guidance for the full year unchanged. Let's get to Anders Opedal, who is the CEO of Equinor. Anders, just run us through the numbers, because if I look at the revenue line, it seems to be lighter than the analysts had been anticipating.
Yes, it's a solid results, but of course the results is also affected with lower gas prices that we have seen since the last quarter, previous year. But at the same time, good operations, solid production increase, enabling us to keep the dividend level at $14 billion for this year.
There are questions today from activist investors as they pour through the numbers, and we've been noting that the UK-based Saracen Partners have filed a resolution. They're going to vote at your annual shareholder meeting on the 14th of May and effectively ask you to update your strategy and capital expenditure plan in light of what they still see as a focus on fossil fuels. Today you're talking about the CapEx plans, the overall total that you intend to spend, but can you just flesh out for us, do you think the company's strategy here is at odds with the Paris Agreement?
What we focus on is to really make sure that when we produce oil and gas, we lower the emission from the production. And we've been able to reduce the emission already by 30%, and we have a plan to reduce it even further by 50%. And this is very much in line with what is expected from companies for own emissions, according to the Paris Agreement. We put forward an energy transition plan to all our investors 2 years ago, and got an advisory vote of 97%. And this is what we are following, and this is the strategy we are following. And we have good progress actually also this quarter. The production from our renewable assets is increasing with almost 50%. So we are moving in the right direction. And at the same time, we've also been able to put several fields with power from shore, reducing our own emission that we are responsible for.
But Anders, there is a line to walk between energy security and moving towards green transition. I just wonder whether you're striking that balance, because if we look at the numbers, is it fair to say you're backloading policy around green transition and putting energy security at the forefront?
We're balancing both. To do the energy transition, we need a balanced energy transition. I just came from Germany, spending time on the Hanover Fair. It's a clear message from the German industry. We need oil and gas from Norway, from Equinor, while they're doing their own transition. This is their own safety net to ensure they have enough energy while they are transitioning. At the same time, for us as a company, we need to ensure that we reduce our own emissions and also investing in future, both decarbonization services and renewables. Special focus we have these days is the carbon capture and storage. We are in the transportation and storage part of this value chain. And this year, we will open up the first commercial transportation and storage facility in Norway, the Northern Lights, where we bring CO2 from Europe and safely store it on the Norwegian continental shelf.
Yeah, Anders, I mean, I take all of that into account as well. And I just question as well, when you put out that energy transition plan that you had put forward then to your investors, you had questions, however, from, as we've noted, from Saracens, the IEA also putting forward a few studies regarding the possible pathway to net zero by 2050. And comparing it to yours, it ultimately points the picture that the likelihood of reaching a lot of these Paris achievements may actually not happen. Is the way to perhaps appease investors also just by increasing spend on renewable energies, particularly in your capital investments? Is that a way forward for you?
We have put forward a plan where we both invest in oil and gas, but also increasing the investments in renewables. But it needs to be profitable renewables. We are focusing on offshore wind, but also invested recently in onshore solar and onshore plants. And this quarter, we are presenting income of $46 million for this business, and it's increasing. So we are doing both to ensure that we have a balanced energy transition, that we're able to deliver the energy the world needs today. At the same time, we're investing in what the energy the world will need also in the future.
Yeah, you're certainly on the cusp of really significant moves when it comes to this, and could really play the foreground in what does an energy transition really look like, particularly with government and consumers playing their role. What is your sense of that part of the transition? Do you think that is coming into play here? Are enough people sort of, you know, playing their part as well in this partnership?
Well, to be able to do the energy transition, you know, everyone needs to participate and really need to work together. We need governments, we need industries, we need consumers. We have to admit that to do this will take time. We have a very efficient energy system built up over many, many, many years, and now we are transitioning into another energy system. This will cost. And it's important to make sure that while we are transitioning, we have enough energy in the system such that it's affordable, right. And that over time it can be more sustainable. So we need to find that balance such that everyone can participate.
Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market moving news, you can head to cnbc.com or join us again on the show with me, Steve Sedgwick, and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.